I'm Chris.
And I'm Kylie. And this is Redefining Resilience,
where we explore what it means to build a resilient lifestyle
so you can thrive in any and every situation. Welcome, Rob. We're so excited to have you on the podcast today. Rob Brenneman is the founder of Brenneman Pork, which is a pretty large-scale operation of pig farming in Iowa. Washington, Iowa is headquarters. And Rob, how long have you been doing this?
Since I was 5 years old and I'm 66, so pretty much forever.
A few years.
Yep. I think we've figured a lot of stuff out and forgot a lot of stuff.
And I think both of those are good things.
Yeah. And some of the stuff we forgot, we got to go back and think about. And some of the stuff we forgot, we didn't need to know anyway.
Exactly. I love it. I was super excited to have you on the podcast today because this is all about resilience. And one big component of resilience is having a vision. And when I think about somebody with a vision, you are the first person that comes to mind. And I've been working with Rob and his team for about a year and a half now. And the Brenneman team is probably the most resilient organization that I have ever encountered in my career. And reason being is because Rob started this business and laid the foundation and laid the values for the company and has a very resilient vision for what he's doing. So we wanted to bring Rob on today to talk about his vision and give us a sense of what it's like to have a vision that you're so passionate about and you work every single day to the best of your abilities to drive towards that vision. So that's what we're going to talk about today.
That's going to be awesome. This is my life. I love this stuff.
I know. And you can tell if you go talk to any one of the team members at Brenneman Pork, they are just as passionate about what they're doing as Rob is, which is super cool to see because it starts at the top. That's why leadership is so critically important to the success of your organization. So Rob, start out. Just give us an overview of your background. How'd you get started in pig farming?
Probably whenever I could start walking. I grew up fortunate that we raised pigs when I was 3, 4, and 5 years old. And we actually lived in town, but my grandparents lived on the farm and I stayed with them on the farm because, you know, I wanted to just be outside all the time. And I just love farming and I love pigs. We started out with pigs. God, I was probably 3 or 4 years old and maybe younger. I don't know. And we had an old chicken house. And then we had sows that farrowed in and a couple pull-togethers. And there was a couple sows in there. And then we had this building that Grandpa built. I think it was built the year after I was born that they started 2 years. So I think in 1960, they built a building that they could farrow sows in, and it had 20 box stalls in it. They were 10 by 10. You know, so Dad would have sows and they'd let them in and out. And I'd tag along with him out there. You know, I learned how to plug pigs into nipples at that age because you knew what it did. And we had straw bedding, and then we went to corn cob bedding. And I got a good story on that as I get down into it. But yeah, I just loved hanging around Dad. And learning what he knew, I just love pigs. And we had cattle, but, you know, a little guy can't go out cattle yard too much. But getting out in the pig barn was awesome. And so then as we started school, I stayed out on the farm. And my brothers and sisters some of them weren't born yet, but they were in town. But Dad had come out, but I'd go out in the mornings early and see what was going on with the sow having pigs. And couple different times got bit by a sow because I wasn't smart enough to stay out of the way. So I got a few scars and stuff on my body.
Oh, no.
But just the passion of doing that and seeing Dad's and Grant, mainly Dad's husbandry, was just intriguing. And you'll learn more as we go on here and understand where that all kind of comes. So then as that materialized and I went to school on a school bus, we were the last. I was the last one on and the first one off because when I got off the bus, I went out and helped Dad chore, go get ready for school, then get on the bus, go to school, then come home. And first one off, boom, straight out to the pig barn and just kept doing that forever. So then from there, we just kept growing it. And I mean, I don't know how deep you want to get into the opening statement, but it went from nothing to 50,000 sows in 60 years. So that's just the progress of time. And none of it was, I mean, there's a vision and then there's a vision, but I really had no idea that it would be as big and as exciting as it is today. I mean, as it grew, I had no idea it would get to this. I knew we would do big things. Where we've got to is just amazing.
It really is. And it doesn't show signs of slowing down at any point.
It's going to slow down just a little bit because we got to take a breather. As you know, we haven't had a real good financial year. But that don't keep us from getting better.
That's nothing right.
Nothing's going to keep us from getting better. Nothing.
I love that.
And with the team we got, they wake up. Tim always says, Dad, can't we just do the same thing twice? And I say, not if we could do it better, but Dad, we got to get it right this time. And I said, well, if us do it better, we'll get it right.
That's so right.
That's kind of the way it's always been.
I think that's cool. If you focus on doing the best you can, it will grow into something astronomical without you even trying.
Yeah, you're right. 100%. You just don't know how good you can be unless you try and be good every day.
Yeah.
It changes every day. We've had some fortunes and got into some things in the pig business and everybody says, well, we don't do it that way. I mean, why would you do it that way? You guys do things different. Your expectations are so high. You know, just that kind of hurt us. I mean, it kind of hurt me. And when I got out of high school, that my expectations were so high and everybody thought I was a big asshole, you know. In a small community, it's like, he wants it done right. And he'll get up our ass if we don't do it right. I mean, that was tough at first. People didn't want to work with me because I wasn't going to compromise on mediocrity. And honestly, in the beginning, that kind of hurt a little bit.
But wouldn't you rather have that struggle? I'd rather have the struggle of getting rid of people that don't want to play the game and finding the people that do, because the only way you're going to do something great is surrounding yourself with people that are great, and you got to weed them out.
Sometimes the problem is there's not enough people that are great.
Yeah.
All of a sudden you kind of feel like you're on an island and it's like, yeah, let him do it that way. You know, he's going to fail. And there's more people that want to see you go do that by yourself because then they can say, see, I told you it couldn't be done. That's what drove me and still drives me today. Don't ever tell me I can't do something.
You know, I hear that a lot from entrepreneurs and business owners is they're motivated and fueled by the naysayers and the people that want to put ceilings on you and you just want to shatter them.
Yep. Well, I'll tell you what's, like I said, hanging around Dad, I had to hang around some of Dad's friends. And he had a lot of friends because when he passed away, I mean, we stood in the funeral line for like 6 hours because everybody had a story about Kenny B. So he knew everybody. And that was awesome. But he had there's some really great people he knew, and there's some really people that were his friends that I would have questioned. But all it took, there was one of his friends, and it was his best friend, and that just said, you little corn cracker, you'll never amount to anything. You guys, you don't have the ground, you don't have the money, and you'll just never amount to anything. And every time he said that, I just had this rage inside of me that says, yeah, we will. We'll make it. And so has some of those failures happened along the way? I guess who's the first one to say something, or who's the first one to coffee shop to say something, and then it just pisses you off more. You know, it's in my case, it was those people that made me mad enough. I knew that we could do it. You know, so when, like I said, go back to that young age of 5 years old and being able to work with animals was awesome. To have a dad that would drag you around and put up with you and take his dirty boots off the seat when you got in the pickup and let you drive the pickup and shift gears for. I mean, it what a greater way of life. It couldn't have gotten any better. And then, you know, so then you tag. So wherever you tagged everywhere he went, because there was no other mode of traffic. We didn't have a fancy little shit you could drive around then. You just rode with Dad. And so as you did that, then, you know, you ran into what I called the movers and shakers. You know, when we were little, when we were that smaller age and got big enough, we'd go to town and run a paper route. So I'd go to town and run a paper route. And then so as this whole thing grew, I went to town and ran a paper route. Of course, I'd do everything big. You know, it had to be all or none. So then I would go in town and hop on a bicycle at home. And, you know, I was 7, 8, 9, 10 years old and start to run a paper route. And as that grew, my brothers would run a paper route with us. So we just kept doing that. And as you did that, you'd get done at the restaurant, or you'd get done and stop into the restaurant. And, you know, the movers and shakers were in there at 5 o'clock in the morning. And you thought to yourself, they got more done by 9 o'clock in the morning and knew what was going on everywhere before most people got their coffee out of their mouth. It just was so impressive to hang around that type of people also that Dad hung around with and did business with. So that, I mean, that's the motivation there was.
So I want to know, when you think about the vision,
yep,
what did the vision initially look like, and what is it looking like today? How has that vision changed over time?
So the first vision that came when I was that little guy, the vision was I'm going to mount to something. And then so as you go along, and, you know, I think I was 13 years old, my mom left home. And so it was just Dad and 5 kids, you know, from 12 to 2, you know. And so that, as you go through life, that vision kind of changes. Now your vision is, you know, that you've got a family to feed, and it just can't be Dad. It has to be big brother helping with all that. And so that vision now is, how do you maintain family? Because there's nothing more than family. So all of a sudden, maintaining the family you had took over, and saying, that'll never be me. We will always have a family. And so that was a vision that started. And how do you incorporate the family into everything as you go through life? And so that was the biggest vision. How do you stay as a family in a small community? So that vision was number one. Then you had the vision of, you know, you got to prove the guy wrong who said you can't do it and you never will be able to do it. So I helped neighbors. I helped neighbors make hay. I helped neighbors shell corn. I helped neighbors work with cattle. I helped neighbors work with pigs. And so as you did those things, you would see the vision, okay, what are they doing right and what are they doing wrong? And how big are they? Because you help the biggest farmers, the farm ground you ran. Everybody's always looking for somebody that could run a tractor or you know, then you went down to the level of you helped, you know, you, being how there was 3 boys in the family, you would hold the pigs for the guy that let his boars get to 60 pounds, you know, So when you start working with all these people in the community that are farmers or businessmen, and you say, okay, I look at that and say, this guy's doing this, and he's doing, I had the fortunality to work, because I like to work with all those guys. This guy does this, this guy does this, this guy does this. I don't like how he does this, but man, it's pretty cool how he does this. And he, you know, and so you just think, okay, if I was a pig raiser, if I wanted to farm, how would it look if you just looked at all the good ideas that were going on and could have the vision to put all that together?
And so that's pretty complex. It was, yeah, your dad that kind of guy that, yeah, that was something you just...
Yep. Dad, and that was probably, like I said, what drove me is that Dad was under Grandpa's wing, and everything Grandpa said Dad had to do, and he could never do anything right. So here comes grandson, that has got the determination of Grandpa to prove Grandpa wrong, not only Dad's friend wrong, but Grandpa wrong, that I can do it, and that it doesn't have to be done Grandpa's way. And Dad couldn't challenge Grandpa, but Rob could. we have the same name, John. So that would, you know, so you challenged grandpa the entire time, dad being the middle guy that drugged you around and was the nice guy that took care of you. And when you got crossways with grandpa, dad helped you out. And then, so then having a grandpa on the other side that was always level-headed and, you know, it's the people you hung, go back to the people you hung around with, and it starts with family. And go back to the grandpa, my mom's dad, and he was level-headed, and he would be really encouraging that you want to do something, go for it. And so that encouragement came. Grandpa's determination on the other side came out, and then dad in the middle, the guy that said, okay, if that's the way Robbie wants to do it, that's the way we'll do it. Because if he wouldn't have agreed to me doing things and helping me with my vision, none of this would have happened. He didn't have any money to do it. He just took me where I needed to go. He was the baseball coach for all of us kids. He was the 4-H leader. And he was just that compassionate guy. And we didn't always get along because I had grandpa's determination and other grandpa's vision. And that was sometimes difficult for my dad. But at the end, he helped me deliver that. So that vision is huge.
Another thing that I know is really important to you is your values. And we spent some time really hashing out some meaningful core values for the team. So talk to me a little about the values that have gotten you to where you are today and how they come through in the company.
Values are integrity. Work ethic is second to none. Work ethic is the desire to go to work every day and accomplish something is number one. You know, the integrity that you do things right. And now, granted, sometimes you end up doing things wrong and it happens. And then you sleep on a minute and say, that wasn't right. Or, you know, you do your best to correct it. Because not everything is perfect and sometimes shit happens, but you just got to correct it. But work ethic, integrity, honesty, always give it your best, show up every day. I got a phrase to show the fuck up. You know, and understand what goes on. Don't just say that, yeah, it got done, verify that it got done. But that all comes into values. The determination to work and show up are probably the two highest values that I, but I, if you don't want to work and you don't want to show up, get the fuck out of my face. So,
yeah, we don't have time for that. We don't need to drag around dead weight.
We don't have time for that distraction.
Yeah.
We just don't. That's not what we're made of. And everybody knows that.
What happens when shit hits the fan? So when you're dealing with challenges and you mentioned having a tough financial year and sometimes things are outside of your control, how do you deal with that?
When it involves money, it's harder than anything. You would think people would be, but we can work through people. There's nothing better than getting knocked down. There's nothing better than failing. It's just that how do you respond to those things? You can get your ass kicked by the markets or an employee or whatever it is. And if you just lay down and roll over, you're done. And this team, we just get up and go at it again. Yeah. And I've got a great coach, not just you, Kylie, but my wife, Char. She's
amazing.
Coach. Yep. She understands that some of the stuff that happens, you cause yourself, and she makes you fully aware of that. So when you get into that battle or that fight or that loss or that whatever it is, she said, you asked for it. And so when you ask for something, you deal with something, and you got to see it through to the other side. And sometimes that isn't easy. And you know, you shit in your bed, you got to clean it up. And that happens.
Love that.
Sounds like personal responsibility is a giant core value over there. And I absolutely love that.
Yeah. Personal responsibility. I don't want to clean up your mess.
Well,
that's right.
So if you make a mess and it was on my watch and you don't clean it up, I will, but you won't be here any longer. If you learn from it, we'll work together. But if you didn't learn from something, then you don't belong here. Learn from those financial problems, those people problems. Learn from them. Don't cave to the fact that you were totally wrong. Sometimes it's consequences, but ultimately something happened, and deal with it. And just take it on and deal with it. You just can't let it fester. No matter what it is, you got to deal with it. Yeah. And sometimes you got to think about it before you deal with it. And
that's a powerful statement, because sometimes slowing down and thinking about things before you act on them is really difficult to do.
Talk to an expert on Blow Up City. That was part of my reputation when I was in high school, and he's just gonna fucking destroy it. Then the other thing in high school, I was called the general, because they knew that if I took charge of something, it's gonna get done, no matter what it was. So but in the process of that, I'd blow shit up. I'd say stupid shit. I'd make stupid shit happen, and it did. And you learn from that, and you say, you know, there's times this stuff comes out of my mouth and I'm like, whoops, I shouldn't have said that. But it's too late. Now you got to deal with it. And it does happen. And you got to be aware. I had a guy, Bob Jones, a neighbor that says, you know, he had really some really good things. But one of them was, I said, Bob, I said, I don't want to leave this meeting or this conflict with a problem. And he said, Robbie, that'll be your choice. I'm like, wow.
Ooh.
You know, I could have left there and said, you know, nasty things. But he said, it's my choice. And so since then, I've looked at that and said, well, sometimes things are my choice. And I tell Char, I always say, we're the parents. You know, we've got to be the ones that help lead the family. We're the parents. And we've got to do the giving and taking if we want to make things work. And as you go through life, that just, you know, I'm pretty solid on decisions and I'm pretty stuck in my ways, but I've learned how to compromise. But when I was, before I was 30, I didn't compromise on anything. It was my way or the highway. And because I knew how I wanted it done, and that's the way it's going to be done. I don't give a shit what anybody has to say. Well, I've compromised. And that, you know, that happened when Char and I were out in the barns taking care of. We had 5 employees and I was a total asshole. I just didn't take doing it wrong for any reason. There is no reason. And we'd go out and get things done and come back and eat breakfast about 7:30, 8 o'clock after we got main things done, eat quick, and then go back out. On the process, we started at 5. And the process of that couple hours, every single person who worked for me except for my brother quit. That was 4 people that left me, Char, and my brother. And I walk in to do, it was just one of those mornings. I walk in to do breakfast and we get done. And I said to Char, well, what are we going to do? And Char says, no, what are you going to do? So,
that's pretty powerful.
What are you going to do? I said, well, I have to become a nicer guy. She says, no, not going to have to. You have no choice.
Yeah.
Or I'm not going to work with you anymore. So that was kind of a come to Jesus moment that said, how do we, you know, that you talk about resilience and you talk about vision. At that time, my vision was just to get the sows fed.
Yeah.
And it's like, so I had to start thinking, I had to do this and try and figure out how I was going to do this with no help. And yeah, that wasn't easy, but one guy did come back and helped. And by God's grace, the week after that, we had a Hispanic by the name of Hernan. Hernan showed up at the door looking for a job. So God says, okay, dumbass, you fuck this one up, I'm going to give you a chance. Be a nice guy or else. And Hernan shows up at the door and we hired him on the spot. And it was the first Hispanic worker we had. And next thing we knew, we had 4 or 5 of them. And in that moment, you knew that you had to treat them differently than you did other people. So you became a better person. And Char had a huge influence on that. And it was do or die. And yeah, we made the best of it. And I learned to adapt. Not that I don't have moments today or haven't had along the way. I always have moments. But sometimes I go in and close the door now.
That's right. A mindfulness timeout.
Yep.
That's so good. And we've talked about all of these concepts on the podcast, and it's so cool to hear them come out in real life, because you've talked about your vision, you've talked about composure and losing your shit and why composure is so necessary, because it really makes or breaks relationships, which leads to collaboration. And you've had to have really strong support networks around you, Char being your key partner in crime in the whole operation. And without her, I know the gas pedal would be pedal to the metal, and we need the brake pedal to say, hey, Rob, slow down.
She's the governor and the brake.
Yes.
She paces me and stops me in my tracks.
Slows you down. That's right. That's right.
So then I gotta put it on idle and open up the mind and say, okay, what can I do that I know this is what I want to do, but what can I do to convince Char that I can first make it happen, and second, it's good for everybody involved, and persuade her enough to say, because if she don't say yes, it don't happen. And so how can I do that? So I've become that's where the compromising has come in, and the vision, and you have to have, and I don't go to her with a half-assed vision. So I've got to have a solid vision before I even approach her, because she's going to have a gazillion questions, and I want all those questions answerable when we have a conversation, because otherwise she's just going to say, well, go start over. And even sometimes I can have the greatest vision and have it all mapped out, but still have to go start over. But she's the greatest thing that's ever happened to me.
Love that.
Yeah. Char's pretty awesome.
Yeah. It's been a good relationship.
Tell us about it. How did you and Char start out?
It's such a cool story. We had what they call the sweetheart swirl. It was FFA and FHA combination, Mid Prairie, Washington, and Kyoto. And the sweetheart swirl was over Valentine's Day, and it was at Mid Prairie School. And so I went over with a buddy. And so as we, you know, we went over and ended up meeting Char, and then I rode over with my buddy, and he, it was really foggy that night, and he went home, and we were going to go to this party where Char was at, and I was following Char's brother, and we ended up there. And so we ended up at one of her friend's house with a whole bunch of people around, and we just met at that point in time and just had a little conversation, and it was kind of cool. So next day when I saw my buddy, I said, hey, Lindsay, you know, Char and I talked a little bit last. She's a nice girl. And Lindsay says, yeah, because their families had run together, you know, because her dad and Lindsay's dad were best friends in high school. And so, which was Kyoto. And so he said, yeah, she's a nice girl. So anyway, one thing led to another. Then I went to ask her out. Here's where your first vision comes in. So it's Friday night, and I call her and say, Char, we go out tomorrow night? Too late. You got to call earlier. So this vision kicks in and says, okay, I'll get a hold of, I'll call her instead of on Friday night. I'll call her on Wednesday night. I called her and I said, Char, we have a date. Nope, I'm already busy. I'm like, holy shit, this is a busy kid. I had no doubt there was probably a lot of guys after that. She was pretty good looking, damn good looking. And so anyway, so I'm like, well, I called her on a Monday night, and I said, okay, you can't be, yeah, I'm already booked up for the weekend. Okay, I said, how about the next weekend? So almost 2 weeks in advance, I can do that. I said, okay, I will be there. And so I pick her up, and so that's kind of where visioning starts. You can't just plan for tomorrow. You got to plan out a few weeks. I'm like, holy shit, I've never done this before. And so anyway, I went and picked her up, and that started. I had a brand new Chevy four-wheel drive Silverado, by the way, and I think that impressed her. So she kept, so I got her to keep going out with me. So that led to, of course, us getting married.
That's why I started dating Kylie, because her brand new Chevy Silverado.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome.
No, I did not.
You got a Jeep.
I have a Jeep. You already know. Rob's a Jeep guy, too.
So that Morgan Wallen song means a lot to me.
Yes.
That Silverado for sale, that was our life.
Yeah. That's only so problem cool.
Was mine was a piece of shit when I got done with it.
That's because it was a working truck.
It was a work truck.
Yeah.
Yep. So I don't know where the hell I was going with everything, but that led to us getting married and having started a family.
So fast forward, tell us about the kids and the family and how they mix in with the business.
Yep. So when we got married, we lived just down the road here a little bit because we didn't have any money. And so when we got married, 1980, that was kind of like, you know, you come out of high school with this vision, this drive to be, you know, when I graduated high school, I had $46,000 in the bank, $150,000, and a brand new Chevy Silverado pickup and a 4430 tractor when I graduated high school. Here we go, 1976. I'm gonna do like everybody else. Like I said, I worked for those guys. I got a vision. I'm gonna farm a lot of ground. I'm gonna raise a lot of pigs, right? Yeah, right. And so 1982, so we got married in 1980, we had a talk, and we were gonna meet an insurance salesman. Or he wanted to meet us. He kept calling. I said, we just don't have time. I said, my wife's gonna have a baby and we just don't have time. And she said, what was that? I said, I had to get the guy off my case. And she said, and 3 weeks later, she found out she was pregnant. So it's like, boy, that worked well. And so anyway,
So you manifested that.
Yeah, something happened. So anyway, we got married in 1980 in September, and Tim was born in September 1981. So, and then in October of 1982, the bank calls me in and basically says you need to find something else to do because they've shut me off on money. Uh-huh. And so, you know, all the things that I had planned and thought I was going to do by then, of course, by then I didn't have anything left. I still had my Chevy Silverado. But anyway, so things got really difficult. That was the first farm crisis. And it's like, wow, what am I going to do? And so anyway, I took Char's dad in with me. We talked to the bank and it wasn't a good conversation. I was a total asshole, I got to admit. And so Terry said, why don't you leave and I'll take care of this. So that's Char's dad. And so anyway, we left and then we ended up signing an agreement that we would split up the partnership with dad. And I would do my own thing. And we gave up a lot of rented ground because that wasn't working, and offered my machinery up for sale. At that time, I had a brand new 4440 I traded for. Char's dad took over the payments on that and took that. So then it's like, okay, it was time to regroup. What can I do that I can do? So the Oprah Redenbacher thing at that time was do one thing and do better than anyone else. That was mm-hmm. what his motto was. And mm-hmm. I thought to myself, I forget the ground thing. I can raise pigs. I can raise pigs and make a difference. I know how to raise pigs, but I don't want to raise them the old fashioned way. So I went to Char's dad. And I said, Terry, I can raise pigs. Well, he wanted this. He had this thing of get a bunch of 10 by 20s and pull together. I said, Terry, I can do better than that. I said, if you'll help me somehow. And at that time, her brother was getting a little start too. So we bought a farm. We bought a farm in 1980, $3,000 an acre. That was the peak of land. But when we bought this farm, we quote had the vision that I said, when I bought the farm, I said, I want this 4 acres deeded off that has the house on it and enough spot to build a building if we ever want to build a building in case something happens. And so the guy that sold it to us did that. He was Bob Jones, the same guy that told me to make sure I kept peace. But so anyway, we had that separated off. And then in 1982, we let the farm go back because we couldn't make the payments on it. But Char's dad agreed to build a building for us as long as we would pay him back on that 4 acres. So in 1983, we started building this building. Once again, you're talking about vision and then getting kicked in the ass. So you have this vision and I still got my $150,000. I'm going to farrow them inside. I'm going to raise pigs and sell feeder pigs. And so we start building this building. In 1983, it didn't rain. And so we're building the building and I still have some ground that I'm farming, but not very much. But it's like, you know, pigs, that feed's going to get expensive, just like it did the last couple of years. So we're building this building, going along, and I'm like, boy, we're going to struggle. making payments. So anyway, I decided to, what could I do for a job that would make money? So I went to, I applied at UPS and I walked in and Herb says, I said, I'm looking for a job. He said, you and everybody else. I said, but I work hard. And the UPS driver, I used to eat lunch with him here. And then Herb asked and said, so he, phone rang one day. I was walking towards the house and I could hear it ringing. And Herb said, come up for an interview. So I went up, interviewed, and I became a UPS driver for the next. So 1983, that summer, I went to work for UPS. I failed my first pigs. It was strictly my own. And they went to market in August of 1983, and they brought $4 a piece.
Wow.
So that just dug the hole deeper. It's like, holy shit, I'm still going to, I got these sows. I'm working my ass off. So I go to work for UPS. I get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and chore. Char's working nights at the hospital, University Hospital in Iowa City, night shift. So we had Tim. So I, neighbor gal come up and watch Tim. I'd go out and chore, go grab him. You had to be to work by 8:15 or you're automatically fired. So I grabbed Tim, take off, meet Char at the 9 mile corner. She'd be coming home from work. I'd be going to work and I'd hand Tim off to her. She would come home and try to sleep. Then I'd get home about, I wanted to work as many hours as I could because I was making good money for UPS. And so I'd take everything. So I'd get home at 6:30, 7 o'clock at night. Then I'd go out and do my chores, you know, because I had to do the chores. And then Char would, she'd take off for work at 10:30 at night. So I'd go in and try and sleep with Tim. And this proceeded on until fall of 1987. And we had paid Char's dad back. We paid $479,000 to the bank back. We were debt free.
Wow.
And I said to Terry, all I want to do is farm. He said, it's your choice. So he said, do it. So I told Char, I said, we're going to raise pigs. And so she said, okay. So that was the vision I had the entire time. And we're going to raise pigs and we're going to sell feeder pigs. And so we came out of that. We did that. And then in 1988, she quit her job and her and I worked together. And then we just started to expand at that time and build off of that. And then, so every year, I think from 1988 to for a decent amount of years, we built a building every year. Not, you know, that I kept thinking, how can we be better at this? So we built a gestation shed to put the sows inside. So we got really good at that. And then I thought, well, this is a missing link. We could be really good at this. So then we would make that work. And we just took the Orville Redenbacher theory, just raise pigs and do it better than anybody else. You know, you'd sit on a 5 gallon bucket a night and pull pigs because every pig mattered. And that's how you did it. And you just became the very best at what you did. And so when you become the, like Doc Kim said, he who does it well gets to do more of it. And so that's what built the vision and the momentum is, okay, I can see this and I can see that. And that's what needs to happen. That's what it takes to raise pigs. That's what it takes to be successful. And it's 100 mile an hour, 20 hours a day. You're on, make shit happen. And that's what we did. And then when Char and I started, when she quit, she started helping me and we just worked as a team and built a team and just kept doing that. And then proceeded to, you know, because we tried not to borrow much money because we knew what that was like. And of course, in the 80s, early 80s, that was 21% interest and that added up. And so, you know, we just kept building off of that and kept, you know, then once I got through the blowing up stage with the people, I realized that you couldn't grow without people and without good people. And so that phase was a good phase to have had because once again, it made you aware of what you needed to do and how you needed to do it. So you picked up and you said, I got to change. And so change, vision, just kept working through that. And then you built that fact of, I always figured that if I was the best at what I did, I'd always get to do it because not everybody focused on raising pigs. There was so much opportunity there. It was crazy. So we just kept doing that and just kept a little time. I remember Dwayne Sprouse, my valet teacher, came over one day and he said, that was when we were 600 sows. He said, I knew you'd be big someday, but I never envisioned you'd be 600 sows. 600 sows is nothing today. And it's like, wow, 600 sows these things. And if you didn't think about it until you sit back and said, yeah, 600 sows. Not too many people had 600 sows because it was all smaller farmers. So that just kept growing. But every day you woke up with an idea that how I could be better.
I love that.
How could I do something faster, cheaper, and better, and do more of it? And get the most out of myself and the most out of the people, the most out of the pig, most out of the tractor, horsepower, and speed. That was my motive.
So I tell a lot of my training clients, focus on 1% a day, because 1% better a day is 365% better every year.
Yep.
And this is like the personification of that method. It's absolutely phenomenal to hear. So,
okay. And for perspective, how many sows do you have today?
50,000.
50,000. And what's the goal for the end of this year?
If we're going to stay here, this year we're kind of dialed in to getting, now we've got the sows to make all of our own pigs, as long as we don't have any disease pressure on those sows. And the goal is to get really, really good at that. And a lot of the, half of that's Prop 12, which is for the California market. So we've geared up to get now. The team is focused on getting really good. And our growth is going to be pigs off of that amount of sows, a few more pigs every day.
And how many pigs total?
About 1.6 million next year.
Okay. So what percentage of America's pork do you think comes from Brenneman pork?
Well, if we feed out 1.6, there's 135 million fed in the United States. So what is that?
Like a solid 1%.
Percent, yeah. Yep, 1%. And it's the best pork, of course.
I totally agree. So if we want to eat Brenneman pork pigs, what products should we look for in the grocery stores?
Well, today, you know, of course, the Tyson brand, we sell the majority of the stuff goes to Tyson. We do sell some to JBS and some to Triumph. But the majority of our pigs go to Tyson. And today, Tyson brand could be our, you know, could be one. I think we're 6 or 7% of the Tyson product. So we could have it there. And then also the Chairman's Reserve product, I think, could have a little bit of that in it. But PFG takes product from Columbus Junction, and it's under Allegiance and West Creek Pork. So that's distributed all over the United States. So that if you went to a grocery store and it had Allegiance pork from PFG in it, that would high chance that's our pork.
Awesome.
And that's what we buy in Naples. We go to the grocery store down there and it's got Allegiance pork. Allegiance or West Creek and Allegiance, PFG is a great company to work with. They're, you know, we're trying to work on some innovation, and they want to build that brand and sell that product all over the United States, plus trying to grow a little bit outside of that. So hopefully with our product, we can help them grow their business.
Because I love that.
We're shooting for quality.
That's right.
And they, you know, and then they've got to market it. They do, and they've got the people out there. Great team.
What advice would you give to a young entrepreneur starting out? If you think back to your former self, what advice do you think you could have used when you were just starting up Brenneman Pork and you're in the hole and you're struggling to dig yourself out of that hole and you feel like maybe my vision isn't going to come to fruition?
I try not to rely. I don't go to people and ask them for a lot of advice. I just try and watch what they do right. I guess what I would say is that know what you want to do.
Yeah.
And I think that starts early in life. And I would say by the time you're in junior high, you should hopefully have a vision of what you want to be, whether that's a baseball player or a pig farmer or a cattle farmer or whatever. For me, it was in my heart. I couldn't get rid of it. And I would assume that flying a plane and playing baseball, you know, like our grandson TJ is flying a plane. I think that's in his heart. That's why he loves doing it. And Carson plays baseball, and it's in his heart. And the other little guys, they all love baseball. It's in their heart. And my ultimate goal is hopefully that pig production and farming is in their heart also, because that's why I get up, is to provide them an opportunity, all the grandkids, no matter which ones it is, you know, everybody's got their passion. So if I look at it as my grandkids versus other kids, you want to have the passion to do something. You want to start having a vision of how to do it. And it doesn't necessarily mean you have to go to college, by no means. I did not go to college. Most of my friends did not go to college. Not everything requires going to college. Tie in to somebody, to admire what somebody does. And so, you know, Dr. Tim Lola had a huge, huge impact on me as it was the early 90s when him and I met up. And he was a guy that saw what everybody did. And he knew what they did right and what they did wrong. And he would introduce both of those to you and say, this is how these guys do it. And this is how these guys do it. This is really good. This doesn't work. So, you know, so understand what you want to do, understand what works, and learn from people who are doing that. Go out and seek out those people and say, okay, I mean, we've got a peer group. It's got a great group of producers, and we share the good things and we share the bad things. Mm-hmm. And we all try and learn together. How do we do more of the good things? And just go out and look at and watch for that, understand what that person or that industry does. And I want to be really good at it, admire that, pick their brain, learn from them, understand it. And if there's something you don't like, then don't do it.
I love it. It's super simple.
Yeah, it's simple. Do what you want to do. You know, there's all kinds of sayings as you go through life. And then, you know, we had a young man at workforce, neighbor kid, Billy. And I was a little bit like Billy, you know. And when it was nice, you'd look out the school window and say, gee, I wish I was home working. And, you know, and you just knew that you weren't a book person, or you just weren't that person. And so Billy and I were talking one day, and Billy said, teacher told him when he was in seventh grade, Billy, you aren't going to amount to anything if you just sit there and look out the window. And I would have had the same thing told to me. And then Billy made the greatest comment. He said, you know, I'd like to tell that teacher today. He says, I make $300,000 a year driving a truck around, and all I do is look out the window all day long, and I see all of America. That was a vision, and that's the same vision that I would give every young person. Know what you want to do. You don't have to have the vision that mom and dad want for you. Have your own vision. At some point in time, you got to have your own vision. My dad did not have the vision that I would farm. And in that time frame, there were a lot of young people who got talked out of farming because it was very, very difficult. And it's like, no, go find something else to do. Go to college, you know, see what's out there. I did not. So if you got the desire to do something, the opportunities today are every bit as good, if not better, than what we had. Mm-hmm. Well, back when it is. In agriculture, it seems tough, and it takes a lot of money to get started, but just tie in with the right people. The door's wide open. The pig business, yeah, there's going to be some, I mean, there's no guarantee in life that we're going to make it, but I can tell you, I'm going to fight like hell. I don't have any intentions of giving up, and not everybody's going to feel that way. But that there's still opportunity today, even though it's been one shitty year.
You know what, Rob? No one can say you do not have a boatload of tenacity.
Yeah.
Because you can tell that ability to bounce back, the motivation, the drive, it is intrinsically hardwired in you at a level 10, and it's not going anywhere.
It's not. And I do listen more than I used to. I at least listen to people. And there's a lot. I mean, my God, with podcasts and, I mean, thank YouTube and podcasts. I don't watch TV anymore.
Yeah, you don't have to.
When I walk, I put a podcast on. When I, you know, I'll listen to some good music once in a while, to Morgan Wallen, Yeah, that guy motivates me. Just his passion to sing is incredible. But in listening to you and, you know, the health, I tell you, the best thing, one of the best things I've done in my life is health, for my own health is, you know, when my brother passed away at 56 years old from a heart attack, who looked like a picture of health, I said to myself, well, you better get your shit together. Because my health wasn't that good. I was working hard and I didn't eat like I should have. And so I started following some of these doctors on podcasts. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I wouldn't have had any other way to communicate or listen. And I actually am probably, I'd call it the ketovore diet. I do just a small amount of carbs, not very much in a week, but mostly meat. And I realized how healthy that is. And I think that go back to high school or junior high, geez, I wish I'd have known. I wish they would have taught me health back then, not carbs and sugars and all that shit you shouldn't eat. But I'm telling you right now, meat's healthy. And I am proof of that.
Yeah.
Not just because I raise it, it's healthy. And I know the other way was not. So, you know, so from that standpoint of venturing out and having a vision to be better of my own life, that helped. Health is great. We have so much opportunity to seek out information today. It's not even funny. Mm-hmm. And now, granted, there's bullshit on both sides. There's no doubt. You got it. But if it's what you want and what you can see, you can learn.
That's right. And I think what you've described perfectly is the ability to be resourceful. And I think that's a theme that has carried through this entire conversation is knowing where the right resources are to help get you where you want to go, leveraging podcasts, leveraging mentors, leveraging, you know, the bank when needed, and leveraging other investors and leveraging the right advisors to help you level up the business. And I mean, you have hit on every single one of the six domains of resilience very beautifully. We didn't even prompt you to do so ahead of time. You just did it because intrinsically you have such a high level of resilience that there's no way you would have gotten to where you are and withstood all of the challenges and adversity along the way if you didn't have this extremely high level of resilience.
I think it's awesome to see what you've done, to hear how you stuck through it through times that just absolutely wiped people out. And not only that, you decided at a young age, this is what you were going to do. And from a young age on, you took no shit.
Yep.
But you also learned, you leveraged people's bad decisions as a way to find out what not to do. You learned from other people's bad moves. Instead of gloating in it and rubbing it in their face, it's like, that's awesome. Thanks for the help and move on, because you didn't have to make that same mistake. I think that's incredible.
Yeah.
And you know, you got to have the vision. You got to anticipate where the puck's going. And you've got to have a little salesman in you. And then you got to sell the, first of all, you got to sell everybody on the idea and the expectations. And then when you do sell them on it, you have to achieve it.
Yeah.
Then if you achieve it, then people believe in you. Without a banker or a wife or a family or a friend, if they don't believe in you, nothing's going to happen.
Yeah.
And then once they believe in you, then it gets really hard, because now you don't want to let anybody down. You know, in the community we live in, if something happens, it doesn't affect just me. It affects 500 other people. You know, it affects the school system. It affects the packing plant. It affects the people that live in town. It affects the YMCA. It affects, you know, the truck driver. It affects everybody. And once you get to this point, it's your job to make sure there's no surprises and that you wake up every day to make sure that nothing falls apart. And when it does, you want to know before anybody else does. And with the team behind our operation, with that team, I'm telling you, without a great support group, bankers are huge in our business. And if we wouldn't have had the support of the bankers the last 2 years, it'd be really hard to be here. But in order to get that support, you got to make them believe that you know what you're doing. And you make them believe knowing what you're doing because you compare and you go out and see and use the professionals that are doing that to seek out advice and work, make it work. And so you got to have that. And the family has got to be involved. And the family is not just your family, it's a whole community. without the whole community pulling in your direction, and the bankers and the kids, everybody. I mean, you can't get here and do this alone. Period. It takes a team.
Rob, I think you have hit the nail on the head with the community and the collaboration aspect of what resilience teaches us. Is you've got to have that strong support system. You have beautifully demonstrated in real life all of the six domains of resilience that we are talking about on this podcast. Can't thank you enough for sharing your story. You made me tear up a couple times, which I knew you were going to do.
Yep.
It motivates the shit out of me to listen to you talk about how you've grown this thing and literally from nothing to something incredible. You're feeding America. It is such a blessing to get to work with you and learn from you. And you guys teach me as much as I try to teach you. And I am so excited to see where this team is going to go over the next few years, because I know the best is yet to come.
That's Jeremy's phrase, the best is yet to come. And Kylie, you honestly have been a tremendous help to me also, I will admit. Shonda, that team you guys have done that's helped me open my eyes. When we met, at NPIC a year and three, almost 2 years ago now, I'm like, I want to talk to Shonda. And she was so awesome. And then that has helped me a ton. I thank you guys enough. And what you've done for our team, and I want to get everybody, our goal is to get everybody around with you and get some leadership, because leadership is the key. Resilience is behind that. But there's no place on the planet I'd rather live than Washington County, Iowa.
I love that.
I mean, this community is absolutely amazing.
Oh, we love it.
So tied together, and our entire family is here. And without family, you don't have nothing.
That's right.
Family's the key.
Well, thank you so much, Rob. You are the best. I'm sure we're going to have a part two to this. Let's just leave it as a cliffhanger. We're definitely going to need Rob to come back and tell us maybe an update a year from now and see what kind of progress the team has made, because they're moving fast and it's crazy how much you guys are growing. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Redefining Resilience.
To learn more about building your mental and physical readiness, check out odysseyresilience.org.
And follow us on Instagram, LinkedIn, and TikTok.